This one is from Psalm Deuteronomy, it's chapter 3, verses 21 to 29. At that time, I commanded Joshua, "You have seen with your own eyes all that the Lord your God has done to these two kings. The Lord will do the same to all the kingdoms over there where you are going. Do not be afraid of them. The Lord your God himself will fight for you." At that time, I pleaded with the Lord, "O Sovereign Lord, you have begun to show to your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For what good is God is there in heaven or on earth who can do the deeds and mighty works you do? Let me go over and see the good land beyond Jordan, that the fine hill country and Lebanon. But because of you, the Lord was angry with me and would not listen to me. 'That is enough,' the Lord said. 'Do not speak to me any more about this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah and look west and north and south and east. Look at the land with your own eyes, since you are not going to cross this Jordan.' But commission Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he will lead this people across and cause them to inherit the land that you will see." So we stayed in the valley near Beth Peor.
Thank you for this. Well, this reading, for those of you who are visiting or not been here every week, it's the third in a mini-series, and we have been looking at a bloke called Joshua, and he got to tag along with another guy called Moses, and we are looking at Joshua, the discipled leader. Someone who had this mentoring program with Moses, as Moses led the whole people of Israel. We guess it's about 1.5 million people, led them out of Egypt, out of slavery, and towards the land that God had promised. Moses was their leader, and there was other leaders, a leadership team. But then there was this guy who's described as the young assistant, Joshua. And he gets to tag along with Moses, and as we've heard in the past couple of weeks, experiences or sees firsthand these wacky episodes that Moses has with God, and he learns. He's right there, and he learns along the way. Well, now we come to this passage, and 40 years have passed since they first came out of Egypt. And they've been trekking around the desert, doing some detours and backings and forths, and they're just getting to the point where at last, after all this walking around the desert, at last they can move forward into the lands that God has promised them. And they're gearing up for that. They're getting ready for that. And Moses is rehearsing with them where they've come from. And he says to Joshua, let's just pause and look back a moment. And he encourages him, he says, look, as we look back, we can see God's faithfulness. We've had our scrapes, we've had people come against us, we've had people stand in our way, and we've had to fight battles, and God has enabled us to win, to keep going forwards. And the obstacles have been removed. And so as they look back, they say, yeah, God has been faithful. But as well as looking backwards, with Joshua, he's also looking forwards. And he's saying to Joshua, well, we know God's faithfulness. Keep that in mind, because as you go forward, there will be new obstacles. There will be new challenges. There will be other people standing in your way. There will be other people who want to fight you and want to overcome you and stop you. But remember that just as God has being faithful then, he will be faithful when you face these new challenges. So looking back and looking forwards. But this episode is a time of great pain for Moses. Even as he's rehearsing the faithfulness of God and encouraging Joshua that God will be with him going forward, it's a painful time for Moses. Because Moses now knows that he himself will not be allowed to go forward. Joshua will take the people forward. Moses will not be going with them. And it even says in verse 23 that Moses pleaded with the Lord and said, "Lord, come on, let's go. I want to go forward with this." And God says, "No." And that happens from time to time. We can take stuff to God, but sometimes God has to say to us, "No. It's not for you, Moses. It's Joshua who's going to lead the people forward." And Moses naturally found that difficult. But think of how far Moses has come. Because at the start, when God commissioned Moses and says, "I've got this big task for you," Moses was reluctant. Moses didn't want to step up to the plate. Moses came out with excuses and he says, no, "God, I can't be the leader of this people. I'm not very good at public speaking and I don't have the confidence and it won't work and it will all go pear-shaped." But God said to Moses, "No, you are the person to lead." And reluctantly at first, Moses leads. But now look, all these years later, he wants to push forward. He wants to go forward, but now God is saying, "No, it's not for you. It's for Joshua to take on the next task." And in the spirit of leading and then handing over for someone else for the next bit, I'll now hand over to Rachel.
Moses being a reluctant leader. And I was interested by, as we were thinking about this, because I remember one of my colleagues at Youth for Christ, where I was for many years, talking of himself as a reluctant leader. And actually this guy was kind of the head honcho, the big chief. And you always imagine that the CEO of a company or somebody quite high up in whatever line of work would have really striven hard, if that's the right word, to get there out of some sort of drive, sense of calling, ambition. And actually I was really interested, and I remember it probably about 10 years on, that he called himself a reluctant leader. And so out of interest, sort of thinking of him, but obviously more importantly with this story, thinking of Moses, I looked at a definition on Wikipedia, and this is what it said about a reluctant leader. It says, "A reluctant leader or hero is a tarnished or ordinary man or woman with several faults or a troubled past." And it goes on to say this: "He is pulled reluctantly into the story or into heroic acts. During the story, he rises to the occasion, sometimes even vanquishing a mighty foe, sometimes avenging a wrong, but he questions whether he's cut out for the hero business. But his doubts, his misgivings and mistakes add a satisfying level of tension to the story." Now, obviously, that's almost kind of Hollywoodizing this idea of a hero. But it went on to say in Wikipedia again, it said, "The wonderful aspect of a reluctant hero is that he or she doesn't have to adhere to any stereotype, such as being incredibly strong or a trained kung fu master. They can be average guys off the street. Indeed, it's often their simple, homespun, down-to-earth thinking that saves the day. This ordinariness is an important factor in allowing the audience to understand and to bond with the hero." That's true, isn't it? As Brits, I always think when you watch Britain's Got Talent or something, we always vouch for the underdog, don't we? And it's often those folks that come through. But actually, there's that sense of ordinariness that often we like when we see in other people. But actually what the picture of Moses shows us is that actually that's often what God looked for and did look for, certainly in Moses. It might be, I'm sure, that many of us can relate to how Moses felt back in that day, that sense of reluctance to pick up the mantle, as Carl said, that sense of feeling ill-equipped and lacking in confidence, as he certainly was, wasn't he, at the beginning, for those of us who know the story. Because he never imagined that he had what it took to carry out the task that God had laid out in front of him. It also struck me that it was probably quite possible, as we think how we relate to the story of Moses, that when God approached him and said, "Moses, I've got this for you to do, you are going to be the leader of people," it's quite possible to my mind that Moses was already pretty busy. That actually he was already serving God. He was already filling lots of other roles, maybe in the quiet, in the backstage, if you like, maybe not so much in the foreground. But it may well be that he was serving God quietly and just thought, "I can't do any more, God. And actually, I don't want to do what you're asking me to do." He was an ordinary man, but clearly chosen by God. I'm sure many of us come from the backdrop of thinking we have a non-hero status, though, and actually it's often quite daunting to think, well, how can we therefore get involved with God in what he might be calling us to do? But this morning, we wanted to think about three particular things, three aspects of how we can serve God in the normal ordinariness of our day-to-day lives. And these are to pick up, to train up, and to release up. The sense of actually what roles do we pick up? How do we look to train those around us? And how do we then release people into all that God would have for them? Well, as I was thinking about this, if we can go back to the pick-up slide, Ollie, if that's all right. Actually, for me, these three things fall into also three different categories. And it may be that as I mention them, you think actually which one connects both with you. And the first one may be for us to consider this morning, actually, what do we pick up in our family lives? Whether that's of us like me with young children, picking up the roles and responsibilities, whether it's those of us with older children, children who long time ago left home and are well into their adult lives, or indeed from the other way, actually, of children now looking after older parents, and so on. So we look at it like that, but also thinking about for those of us in the workplace, actually, what does God call us to pick up in the workplace as a team member or as a manager or as a boss? And thirdly, to think about actually in our church family here, what does God call us to in terms of our simple, big or small ministries, peer to peer, older to younger, across the generations that we live with in our church family here. So we're going to think about those things as we move on. But I wonder what God might say to you this morning as to what he might call you to, not just pick up, but other things that we'll look at in just a few moments. Well, I think what God's revealed to me over particularly the last 2 or 3 years is that God doesn't keep on asking you to just take on more and more roles. Actually, there's a real sense in God that he has a place and a call and a timing, doesn't he, for each and every one of us. But he doesn't want us to be burnt out, overburdened, ill-equipped to do what he calls us to do. And even though we, out of our non-hero status, might be reluctant leaders, helpers, peers to get involved, actually, there's always a time and a place. And I think for me, what I've learned is 4 things particularly, is that actually it's our responsibility to first of all listen as to what God might be placing on our heart, calling us to pick up. But in that, to be really discerning as to what that is, whether it is in the workplace, whether it is in the family, whether it is in our church here. Surely ours is the responsibility to think, God, where can I be most fruitful? Where can I, with all my gifts, and my gifts that I don't yet have, or I don't have because other people have those, but where can I be most fruitful and when? Timing and God's economy is everything. Like Moses, there'll be certain things that are asked for each and every one of us in our lifetime at different times, whether it is in parenting, whether it is in ministry roles, whether it's serving, whether it's with CAP, whether it's in the church, whether it's in the school, wherever it might be. There will be a time and a call and a place for each and every one of us. For me personally, as things rise up, and I often, as people who know me well, get excited and think I want to do it all, actually what I've learned, I think, over the years is actually that when I sense God maybe pricking my ears up, giving me that sense of call to something, is to actually hold on to it, retreat a little, make a list of everything else that I'm involved in, and actually really have that sense of discerning. God, is it for now? Is it for now? Is this the right time? And I think what God's helped me to do, even over the last few years, is to realise that actually sometimes it might be the right thing, but the timing isn't now. And I'm sure many of you have journeyed through that. But the other part of certainly what I've found is that sometimes if God calls you to do something new, then actually something else might have to go for that time. Because God doesn't want us to burn ourselves out or be reluctant, but to be fruitful in what we're doing at the right time. And in knowing God's faithfulness like this, for Moses, like Joshua, we can be assured completely that God's timing is perfect in all these things, and that God's leading is great and his equipping is complete on us when it's the right time. We said also that we'd look at this aspect of training up. Again, going back to Moses and Joshua, you see this amazing picture, as Carl mentioned, they journey together, don't they, for quite some while. Moses did take up the call. He did, reluctantly maybe, ill-equipped as he felt, he took up the mantle, but he took Joshua with him. And there's many Hollywood movies, some of us will be more familiar with some than others, that actually show this really important sense of training up, and not just always older to younger, sometimes peer-to-peer, sometimes manager to team member, whatever it may be. But some of those films that I was thinking of were, you'll be familiar with, The King's Speech, Dead Poets Society, any Star Wars movie you choose to look at, Mr. Holland's Opus, and my favourite has to be Karate Kid, where you see that sense of mentoring, but actually not just for the sake of it, but for the sake of actually a lifelong, usually lifelong relationship, which invests heart, energy and soul into seeing people be fruitful and trained and grown in their own way. Like these films, we're all called to discern who it might be that God might be seeking us to help journey with, live life with, invest in, and train up. In the children's talk, the verse that I mentioned from John 15 said, "Love each other just as I have loved you." And actually mentoring, training, walking, journeying alongside people is absolutely a way of loving people as Jesus showed us, isn't it? If you think back to how Jesus showed his love for people, it was all about meeting them at their point of their starting point, meeting them at their point of need, discerning how Jesus could journey, ask good questions, see what their need was, and just meet it exactly where they were. And sometimes for us it might be that our love, our care, our blessing other people is actually in investing and mentoring, just like Moses and Joshua. And actually the oldest form of teaching in the world is mentoring. So long before there were chalkboards and desks, we would see that people would get alongside each other. For example, I was reading about the rabbis who chose young boys to go and journey with them and learn skills, learn the teaching, learn the scriptures. Blacksmiths would invite young men for training with them. Fathers would teach their sons. And as I was thinking, I thought, isn't it sad that actually our culture is often suspicious now of these relationships because of the media and the world that we now live in. But actually, it's a really biblical sense of actually that investment, not just sharing information, but the lifelong relationships. My challenge to you just momentarily would be to think, actually, if you were to think of somebody, the one, the two, who'd invested in your lives in the past, I wonder, I bet you could quite easily recall the one or two who just loved and cared for you and nurtured you to be the person that you are today. Because these relationships, the one, the two and the three, are massively significant. So what does that look like for us? Well, we said a parent in church, in our work. Well, as a parent, surely all that we do, however hard, however much we feel like pulling our hair out at times, surely what we're doing is training up our children to hopefully know spiritually, socially, academically, emotionally, so that they can be the most rounded young people and adults that they can possibly be. With God's help, we fail all the time, don't we? But actually, this training surely is there because we love and invest in our children. In our work, I wonder for those of you who work in teams, who are managers, who are bosses, actually, Jesus encountered people in such a way in the one-to-one that left them feeling totally encouraged, valued, having that sense of self-worth, sometimes with a challenge, and we find that in place of work, don't we? But my question would be for those of us who lead teams, who direct others, who work alongside others, actually when people encounter you, if you're training them or just journeying with them, what sort of feeling are they left with? Are they left feeling valued, encouraged, challenged, yes, but also accepted and a sense of worth? Or do they leave feeling that they've not met the mark, disappointed, and so on? In our ministry roles, we're all called to share our lives with those around us. Just like this slide shows, share the road, walk the walk. And so many of us do that, don't we? I know so many people here pour their lives alongside into groups, whether it's toddler groups, whether it's in the iPods praying for people, whether it's in the food bank and so on. So many people are training people up, investing in people's lives. And we all know that actually this is where so many people, a recent report I saw said that 89% of Christians have said that they became Christians because of the love that had been shown to them by the love of another Christian investing and investing and investing in them. So how do we do this? Well, in summary to all of that, the trick surely is here that actually we need to be individuals who are so secure in ourselves, knowing who we are and knowing how much God loves us, and that we can be rooted in him, that this then gives us the ability to love and love and love and invest in the people around us. Without knowing how rooted we are, that surely then inhibits us to not be able to give that love to other people. So we need to know that we can be secure in Christ and all that he is to us and has done for us. And not only that, but actually my belief is, and I'm sure it's biblical, is that surely as we train and invest in others, that we need to know and can supernaturally ask God to equip us with a desire that they become bigger and better and go on to do more amazing things than we are ever capable of. Because indeed, actually, that's what the disciples did. Jesus ultimately paid the price, died and rose again. You know, incredible. No one could do more than that. But actually, his disciples went well beyond his reach geographically in taking his word out beyond him when he descended into heaven. In the same way as we invest in our children, those around us, our teenagers, and our friends, then actually what we want for them is to go on to do great things with God at their side. Lastly, as we look at our story of Moses, and go on to the last slide, Ollie, if we may, there's this sense of releasing up. Moses felt the pain, didn't he, of actually looking out over the promised land, as Carl said and we read in the story, and actually God saying, you need to release Joshua, because you've trained, you've been obedient, you've equipped him, and now he's the one that needs to go. There'll always come a point for us, similarly, where we've invested in an individual, in a friend, in a child, in a job, possibly, where actually it's time to release it. And this can often cause us pain. And I know it has been for me, it's been for Darren, in job roles that have changed or have gone, and for friends as well, which cause pain sometimes when relationships change. But again, we need to pray that at those points in time, God helps us with the things that we've said, so that we can listen, we can discern, that we know God's love, but we also know his timing in these things. God made it quite clear to Moses, didn't he, when it was time to actually step aside and for the younger Joshua to come on through. And yet Moses will have been amazingly blessed for his service to God for so many years, I'm quite sure of that, and gone on to do other great things. So how does this look for us? Well, I'm sure many of you who've gone ahead of me and have had children who've left home, gone to university, got married, actually there's pain potentially in much of that, in the difficulties that sometimes life throws at us in our parenting roles or family roles, whatever that can look like. But there's a time that's right, even within that, isn't there? I'm sure I've got that all yet to come and to grapple with in the future. There's sometimes difficulty in feeling that it's time is right to hand over a job role and to discern that, to pick up something new and to work out when the timing's right. And it's our wisdom and discernment, isn't it, and prayerfulness under God that helps us to know that. I know for myself in moving on from YFC, in handing over, training up younger people in roles of leadership that I've been in the past, there's been a sense of this is the right thing to do, but actually it's quite tough when you pass it on and they take it on. Everything's good about that, but actually there's that human sense of, oh, okay, well, what does this look like for me now? How do I readjust? How do I rejig things? And I'm sure others of you can appreciate and can empathise with that. There's a rejigging almost of life and how that looks, and yet that can be an ultimate blessing as well. In Deuteronomy 26:28, it was then that God actually showed that he was quite angry with Moses, who at that point in time, presumably having stepped very much into his leadership role, not been so reluctant, but had served God in so many years. But God was angry with Moses in trying to take on the mantle, take on, keep on with his role beyond the time that God had actually called him to. God was actually calling Moses out, but was calling Joshua on. And sometimes we need to be wise and discerning as to what that looks like. What struck me about that, particularly in a world that we live in and working with so many young people, so much in our media, isn't there, about mental health and the difficulties, the aspects that can batter our lives and make us wobble. And it struck me that actually Moses could have had an almighty wobble at the point in time where God called him out and called Joshua on. It could have completely knocked his status, his sense of well-being, his happiness, his sense of, well, what do I do now? What does this mean for my life? But actually that takes us back, doesn't it, to us thinking actually we need to be so rooted and grounded in knowing who we are in God, knowing our worth, our status, our value because of God and what he said on our lives, that actually we know that we are called still to invest and love and serve, but actually the backdrop might look different and that we have another part in God's plan. So the next slide shows a little clip, not a clip rather, just a slide here which says this, that as we look to train and we invest in people, there comes a point where we need to release, and it says we can release into flight, but but you can't always control the journey. And this strikes me as being quite challenging, actually. If you're a parent and you're parenting, you want the best for your children, and maybe they make decisions that you don't agree with. Or actually your work colleagues have gone off and done something quite different to what the instructions or the team agreement seem to have been. Or in ministry roles as well, where we train people up and actually go and do things differently. But actually there's a sense of release, isn't there, that God calls us to, that actually God underpins, he carries us, he holds us. And whilst we might help release people into flight, like this picture, we then have to let them go and just trust. And as parents particularly, I'm sure, pray hard that actually God will be the one to carry them as they move on. I love collecting sort of Google images and pictures, and this is one that I've got stored on my phone, which I really like. The next picture has come up on the screen, and it says this, picture of a little girl there with her wings, but it says, "But what if I fall?" But the quote back says, "Oh, but my darling, but what if you fly?" And there's a sense, isn't there, in the training up and the investment and then the release, that actually we need to so love the people around us that actually our heart for them has to be, and our sense of God's knowing them alongside is actually, why think the worst? These people could actually entirely fly. And for our young people, our children, our friends, surely we need to trust God and expect that with his underpinning, with his help along the way, that they will fly. So as we look at the story of Moses and, Joshua. We think actually of a picture, I think it's quite helpful, of all these things, of actually how we're encouraged to pick up a role, pick up people that God will have us walk alongside and to bless each and every day or for a period of time. We're called to train people up, to journey alongside, to offer hospitality, love, care, and do what we can do so that God will use us in the small or in the big as they're trained up, and then we're called to release. But the absolute truth within this is that God calls each and every one of us. And at different points in our lives, we'll sit in different areas of those to be picking up, to be training up, or to releasing up. So today, as we have a time to reflect on this and move into communion in just a few moments' time after some more worship together, I wonder if we can just think together, actually, how can we today, therefore, be committed to do some of these things, but moreover, to serve God with our whole heart, asking him to help us to discern who are the one or the two or the three that God might have us walk alongside and for what period of time or maybe a lifetime. How can we train them to fly so that they can be all that God would have them be? And in doing so, how can we dig deep ourselves so that we again know that God has a plan for us, that God will root us in knowing his absolute love for us, and that his will for us will continue above and beyond to accomplish all that he wants to be doing in the world around us. Let's just have a moment to be quiet and we'll pray as we lead into worship and the band comes up to lead us. Father God, we just thank you that you are so for each and every one of us, that you want us to fly, you want us to be people who seek you and serve you. Lord, I pray that as we go into a time of worship together, would you just be whispering to us to know, Lord, whether there's anything that you would want us to be picking up, people to be training up, or how we release others so that they may fly. Holy Spirit, we just pray as we come to you and we worship you this morning. We thank you for your faithfulness as you were with Joshua and with Moses. Thank you that even today you are just as faithful and your plans are just as big, but we thank you for using us in them. Help us to be listening and discerning and fruitful in every way. Please speak to us as we worship you now. In your name, amen.